You're listening to the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia.
David, it seems that there are always a lot of news stories and events going on in the UAV arena. It's kind of hard to pick just a few, but what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, I think this week was a big week for UAVs because in Washington, D.C., we had the AUVSI, Unmanned Systems 2013 conference, a giant trade show for UAVs and UASs. So the AUVSI is the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. You can follow them on Twitter at AUVSI. And they've been around since the mid-70s, so this is not something new, although it's now being popularized because the press are caught on to the fact that it's a bunch of people talking about that D word.
Yeah, the drone word. We'll talk about that in just a second. I see from the AUVSI website that they have about 7,500 members, which is a good, healthy group of professionals. And those come from a variety of different places, government organizations, industry, academia, all kinds of folks. But they're all dedicated to advancing the unmanned systems and also robotics community.
And it was quite a big source of news. There was the big ones are there, General Atomics, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, as well as Incito and various other smaller companies, all sort of harking their wares. But it's been a really interesting week from watching it from the Twitter feed from afar. Both you and I talking before the show, were a bit disappointed because next year it's California and we missed the one that was really close to us. But if we keep up this up, we probably will eventually get to do one of those shows.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, what do you say we jump right in with some of the news stories? All right, the first story comes from Breaking Defense. This is titled, Don't Say Drones, Beg Drone Makers. They mentioned that to the public, the word drone has a bad connotation. It means military and death to a lot of folks. Of course, we're inundated with stories in the news about drone strikes, and so that has a kind of a bad connotation to it. David, do you think the industry can change the word and change the perception?
I don't know. I mean, it is pretty, the article does cite one of my biggest pet peeves that no matter what UAV you're talking about, you end up getting a predator as the photograph at the top of the article. And actually, one of the things they said in the article was that when they show someone or ask them what they picture is a drone, they actually come out with a predator because it's been so ingrained by the mass media that is a drone, and it's tough. The article goes on to say that while everyone was trying not to use the words, there was a lot of people that inadvertently used the word. So it's sort of like, we're going to try not to use the D word because it just, in my opinion, the word drone should only be used for large United States Air Force fighters that have been converted to be shot down by missiles. That's always been my image of a drone.
That's kind of the original definition of a drone, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and unfortunately, drone is a term has been used since the doodlebug or from day one. So it's a mindless aircraft, meaning that no pilot. But really, in the modern-day technology, we probably should keep the word drone for the bees.
Yes. And the thing that was kind of interesting to me was in the article, they point out the degree to which they're trying to kind of, you know, change the use of that word by the press, in that the Wi-Fi system at the conference had the password "Don't say drones." So when the press was logging into Wi-Fi, that's what they had to type in as the password. So I mean, that's a clever idea. It I think definitely would get this concept in front of the press. But whether or not they actually start using different terminology is kind of hard to say. I mean, what are they going to say? UAVs or UASs or RPAs or, you know, all those different definitions, different terms for the kind of the same thing.
I mean, and there are other examples. You could always talk about the F-117. If someone says the word stealth, pretty much they get an image in their head, even though they're not an airplane geek or into aviation. They got either a picture of a B-2 bomber or an F-117, and right, they don't really know the difference. They just know that that's a stealth. And so, and we won't even talk about the automobile that was named by that, the very crappy car. but it's in the jargon. It's in the vernacular. We're going to try to stay away from it on the show. I think we need to make a conscious effort of it. So we're going to do our part to say no to drones. So I guess we can move on to moving from bees to mosquitoes.
This is quite an interesting story, and this is another example of the kinds of interesting applications for unmanned aerial vehicles that we can see. This is an item from Gizmag titled Florida Keys Turns to UAVs to Take on Mosquitoes. And the Florida Keys Mosquito Control District is been testing or will be testing a Condor Aerial Maverick UAV. It's a fixed-wing UAV. And this is something that I think, David, this was originally developed for law enforcement, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a small hand-launched UAV. It kind of looks like a hawk or a condor. Now, when we say take on mosquitoes, unfortunately, it's not going to be dogfighting them, even though they've gotten that big in Florida, but they're going to be looking at using infrared to find where the larvae is in ponded water, so they can go and then spray them and to kill the larvae that are in the standing water, because that's where mosquitoes like to breed.
And I've got to believe that this is an application that everyone in Florida would embrace, because I mean nobody likes mosquitoes. And it's a great use of, for one thing, an existing vehicle. So it's an interesting use for a UAV, something that is probably not requiring any modification or any additional expense to utilize it this way. It's just take what we've got and use it to do something that everybody's going to support.
And think about the cost benefits, Max. We're talking about something that we're doing an aerial survey, which is normally either done with an aircraft or a helicopter. So you've got to pay for a pilot, rent the aircraft, the cameras, the fuel. Here you're talking about a small, very efficient aircraft that can cover the same swath of land, maybe not as quickly, but still provide detailed coverage and at minimum cost. So for a cost-benefit analysis, if you look at having a helicopter do this or having a small UAV, the UAV is gonna win every time. I mean, and God forbid something happens, it's just going to, I mean, it's not going to risk life or limb or anything like that. So it'll be interesting to see what the results are when they do the August 26th. Now, to be fair, the Florida Mosquito Control District is not going to be flying the aircraft. The Condor Aerial Company is actually going to be flying it on their behalf. So you're going to have a little bit of, so you're not going to have them taking over the project altogether, but they will be directing the company to fly the aircraft.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder if they're doing that just to ensure that they have a successful evaluation, a successful flight, and then if it provides the value that they're looking for, then I would assume that the flight operations, as it were, would transfer to the folks in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing a one-off test, you probably don't want to spend all the time to have someone trained and worked up to do the one-off test in case it fails. In this case, they're going to let the company do it, and I hope for their sake it's successful, because I hate mosquitoes.
Nobody likes mosquitoes.
I mean, the other thing about it is if it is successful, malaria still is one of the largest diseases in the world, and think about many of the third world countries. It would be a great way to work on the mosquito populations there. The UN could send someone in with one of these drones to diagnose where the problem's in to prevent the spread of malaria.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, David. That's an outstanding point, that this has applicability not just to Florida, certainly, but wherever there are mosquitoes in such numbers that where some sort of effort to eradicate them is required. And yeah, certainly in places that are subject to malaria and things like that, this could be very effective.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, our next item comes from Breaking Defense. This is Northrop offers rental drones to Air Force and Customs. So Northrop Grumman, they have a new idea for the Air Force and for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Service. Rather than train remotely piloted aircraft pilots on things like the Predators and the Reapers, or even in expensive simulators, why not give them some basic flying time on a small drone, something that they pay for by the hour? This sounds like a really good idea, David.
And yeah, I mean, even full-scale simulators cost a lot of money to operate. And what the article did go on to say is most of the accidents that occur for remotely piloted aircraft operations happens to occur in landing because there's sort of a spatial disorientation. If you imagine what a Predator looks like, it's got that ubiquitous ball underneath the nose, which is the camera system. And that's where the pilot sees it. So you're flying the aircraft you're sitting in one space, but your vision's sort of limited and you don't have the full sensory thing that you would get when you were in a real airplane. But that is where the accidents occur, is people just don't have the feel that they would have. And Northrop is saying, well, you know what? Here, we'll rent you a couple of UAVs per hour, and we won't even hold you responsible if you crash them, because basically you've saved the taxpayers billions of dollars. You know, you crash a Predator, it's one thing. You crash a 15 feet wingspan small drone, yeah, we'll just buy, we'll pretend it's a potato chip and we'll make more.
This is the Sand Shark drone.
Yeah, it's a small, aerodynamically, I guess it flies like a Predator or a Reaper, but it's substantially smaller. They're deciding what kind of engines to put on it, but basically it would be flying a smaller version of the real aircraft, which would be a Reaper or a Predator. And keep in mind that it's just not the Air Force anymore that flies Predators and Reapers. The U.S. Customs and Border Patrol fly Reapers for defense and for Homeland Security. And Predators are flown by NASA, and Reapers are flown. So there are civilian organizations that need to train their staffs, and they don't want to risk their high-value systems.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. This Sand Shark, I think it's controllable in a fairly straightforward or easy manner in terms of the support equipment that you'd need, right? This can be controlled over the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a very simple system, and I think part of it being a simple system is that way if something does break, it's not a great loss. It's in a way Northrop thinking out of the box, you know, and looking for solutions. And as the whole UAV, UAS systems move out to the general public, it's a great way to get people started on, you know, if we start seeing law enforcement using UAVs, Northrop is going to have a business. Oh, come, it'll be setting up a flight school for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, and another agency that's taking a look at UAVs in their operations is the U.S. Coast Guard. And we see in defenseupdate.com the piece UAVs in the U.S. Coast Guard. And so now drug smugglers have something new that they need to worry about, and that's the Scan Eagle. And the Coast Guard has been conducting some demonstration trials of the Scan Eagle. And in fact, they've already interdicted a half ton of cocaine as a result of this. And what they can do is use the Scan Eagle to go out and look for the go fast boats and you know, other things that the drug smugglers are using to bring drugs into the country. And they're finding so far anyway that they've had some really good results.
Yeah, it's going back to the old days where you launched an aircraft off of a boat to go find the enemy. In this case, it's go fast boats or the small one-man submarines that smuggle the cocaine. The nice thing about something like a Scan Eagle, and we talked about Scan Eagle a little bit last week because it was the first one to get FAA certification, is Scan Eagle's fairly quiet and far away from the ship. You can start tracking these ships over the horizon. So you're not sticking yourself out in the middle of the ocean. You're tracking the boats and you can sneak up on them and you can observe them from a distance. And the Scan Eagle is a fairly small aircraft and will fit very comfortably. They could probably have three or four of them on their catapult launches and their net recoveries off of a cutter. And it's just another pair of eyes to see beyond what the ship can see.
And the Scan Eagle, what it's doing is streaming back the video from its own camera back to the Coast Guard ship.
Yeah, absolutely. It's another pair of eyes. You know, it's the ultimate binoculars. And the nice thing is it's probably not going to be detected it'll be really nice that our drug smugglers will start looking towards the skies because they're afraid some drone's going to come down on them.
Now, as you mentioned, the recovery on these is with a net-based kind of system. I wonder if that's presenting any kind of a problem on board a ship.
No, the Navy and the Marines have been doing this forever. I mean, it's a big net. I mean, having seen it in person at the FAA Center in Atlantic City, it's a really large net. I mean, you really have to work hard to miss the net for it to recover. And it's a very effective recovery. It's something the Israelis have been doing in their drone programs for years now, I guess would be the best way to say it. So it's a pretty standard recovery for drones or UAVs that don't have landing gear. And the Scan Eagle is probably the larger end of those kind of net recovery vehicles. Beyond that, you're probably going to get an aircraft that has landing gear. But some of them are even recovered by just catching them. You know, when we were talking about the Florida, the small one. I mean, that would basically, you fly over and you have someone run underneath it and turn off the engine and you catch it. It's a little glider. Landing gear is weight and you don't necessarily need it. So you can hoist a net up on the back of a cutter and fly the Scan Eagle in it and you hoist it down and get it set up for the next launch. And the catapult system's not much bigger to launch it either.
And the U.S. Coast Guard is pretty happy with this. And I guess according to this article, they're looking to roll out at least some type of a small UAS across its entire national security cutter fleet. But not until 2017. I guess maybe that's because of lining up the funding for that or something.
Yeah, I would assume that's everything nowadays is all about sequester and budget. So, and the Coast Guard's pretty low on the pecking order. So they've proved that it's a valuable asset. So you might see more and more tests, unquote, to prove the system's worthwhile. So, but if they can keep bringing back as much cocaine as they did on this mission, I think you'll see more tests to take the opportunity to use the aircraft.
Speaking of the Scan Eagle, there's an article in Flight Global where in situ is looking to widen the civilian applications for the Scan Eagle. Now, this, of course, is a Boeing subsidiary, and they've been making some good progress with the Scan Eagle. In addition to the Coast Guard application that we just mentioned, there is also an undisclosed oil company, an unnamed oil company, that is looking to perform ice flow monitoring and wildlife observation flights, and that's off the Alaska coast. But the Scan Eagle is turning out to be kind of popular for these initial commercial applications, and it's got quite a history to it. The article points out that the Scan Eagle has more than 730,000 operational flight hours, which that's pretty impressive. That's got to tell you that it's pretty learned out and pretty reliable as an air vehicle.
Yeah, I think as an unmanned aerial system, it is pretty mature. I think the Navy have used it for many years, and the Coast Guard, and for wildlife. I mean, the oil company that's going to monitor it for pipelines, and it's kind of environmentally sound because you're not flying a very large helicopter or airplane. You're flying a smaller vehicle that can blend in with animals and will not disturb them, so they can do the tracking that way. I think there's going to be a lot of that coming forward, where we're going to see, when you want to get into an environment but not disturb the environment, a drone probably would be a great way to go.
You know, David, it's kind of interesting that these applications that we've been talking about for the Coast Guard over the water, for this oil company off the coast of Alaska. I mean, we're talking about missions that are not in populated areas, so that if something were to go wrong and there were to be a failure of some sort, that it's kind of unlikely that there would be any impact on any people. And I wonder if that's intentional, or it just kind of turns out that some of these applications have those characteristics.
Well, I guess what I was saying about the wanting to disturb or not disturb the environment, those kind of open areas are areas that you don't want to disturb the environment. Do I think we're flying drones on a regular basis over cities, not necessarily the United States, but I think you'll discover that more and more, there are limited right now avenues for these to go. I mean, the Coast Guard is a paramilitary organization. It's doing something that pretty much the Navy's been doing for years. An oil company, that's a whole different thing, but it's also people thinking out of the box. Now, the Florida article that we talked about, that's going to be flying over populated areas, but it's a smaller aircraft that, should something happen, probably will not do as much damage as, say, something like a Scan Eagle, because it's a small hand-launched vehicle. Right. So yeah, I think one of the things that we're going to talk about going forward is, I guess we're going to talk about scalability, you know, and the UAV or UAS industry has a drone for you, I guess would be the best way to describe it.
There's
never going to be one size fits all, which is why we have micro drones, which is why we have things like Global Hawks. They're purpose designed and they're kind of specific, and those kind of characteristics about where they're operating is going to affect their size and their dimensions and their capabilities. So I think that's one of the reasons why you and I like this subject so much, is it's the ultimate diversity.
You know,
and there's so much undiscovered yet about UAVs. You know, everybody's coming up with a new idea every day, you know. And the thing about the DC conference was, there was Boeing talking about but there also were people there who had small handheld drones, and there were people who were the do-it-yourselfers, who are building their own and learning the technology that way. So I'm really looking forward to talking about this topic. And the other thing I learned about this week watching Twitter is the people who are involved with it are passionate about the subject.
Ah, yes. Which is a characteristic that we see quite often, I think, in aviation. Yeah, and it's important to have that kind of passion.
And we come from a show where they use the word geek, and these are geeks. These are people who really like the stuff, know the stuff, and go whole hog into it. So it's going to be really cool doing this show every week, because I'm sure there's going to be something to talk about, and most of it will be positive, folks. I really don't see us having a whole week where the only thing we have to talk about is a bunch of terrorists being taken out by a Predator, which goes back to that drone article about don't say drones. It was interesting that one of the comments was, it's really not a drone strike, it's an airstrike. It's an airstrike carried out by an unmanned aircraft, but we use the word drone strike now. But right. It could have been equally done by an F-16 or an F-15 or an Apache helicopter, but it was done by a UAV. So the media calls it a drone strike.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, it's not really any different from the standpoint of the impact and what it achieves. It's just delivering it via a different means. All right. Well, our time is drawing to a close. David, any last items that you wanted to mention from the last week?
No, I think we're good. Again, this is really exciting for me. You and Max have been talking about this for months, and it is kind of nice that we've kicked the snowball down the hill, and let's watch it grow.
Very good. All right. If you'd like to find us online, the website is theuavdigest.com. There you'll find show notes to this and all the other episodes that we will be providing. If you want to send us an email, we have an address for that, of course, and that's feedback@theuavdigest.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter, where we are UAV Digest. So I want to thank everyone for listening. Really appreciate it. And as David said, we're excited about carrying this forward and on and on and on. And hopefully you'll find this of value to you. So David, I guess that's about it. And we'll talk to you next week.
Yep. Thanks. And thanks for listening, folks.